And welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on a big game in England, as we will cover Liverpool, Manchester City, Klopp against Guardiola, and title holder against biggest title challenger. My name is Erik Elias. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Erik, and hello, everyone. It's nice to be talking again about the Premier League. That being said, it was quite nice last time to listen to Joel in the podcast, someone that, having someone that's not me in the podcast just to have some variation. How did you like it?
Yeah, very much. It's very good to have somebody with a proper British accent instead of your US accent and my Dutch accent. So that's good. And we stay a bit British-oriented because we go into the Premier League. And for me, Jose, it used to be a Clásico, but for me, the biggest, highest quality game in football is now Liverpool against Manchester City. I think I said this on the podcast last season as well. You could see the tactical execution today so good. And for me, it was a confirmation of what I said earlier, that this is now the highest level in football when two teams meet.
Absolutely. I agree. People can get angry at us if they want. I would also stand by that statement. I think this is the biggest match in terms of player quality combined with top players plus top tactics. These games are always quite nice. Both teams have several, no one is quite dominating. They always alternate different phases of dominance. You have top players executing tactics really well. There's always so much to dissect. I mean, that's why I think it took us an hour longer to start recording, because we still had so much to talk about.
Yeah, so let's just dive right into it. That we start with always with a little bit introduction and lineup. So you take Liverpool. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So I'm going to start talking about Liverpool. So Liverpool have been facing a pretty tough winter. So out of their last 8 league games, they have only had 2 wins, so only 2 wins since Boxing Day. And that, of course, makes them lose steam in their fight for the title race. Honestly, this is something we were discussing with Erik. It's kind of shocking that Liverpool are still kind of in the title race, given their injury situation. This is something that I think none of us had ever seen. Their 3 center backs in the squad having season-ending injuries. It was Gomez, it was Virgil, and now most recently, Joel Matip, that forced them to make these emergency moves in the transfer market with Kabak from Schalke and Ben Davies from Preston North End. Neither player played today. Kabak was on the bench. So Klopp still went for the expected center back duo that we thought was going to be there of Henderson and Fabinho. We got the usual 4-3-3 from Liverpool. So Alisson...
Alisson. Yeah, we'll talk about him later a bit more, eh?
We're going to talk a lot about Alisson later. As we said, the defense that we expected with Trent, with Robertson, and Fabinho and Henderson as the center backs, a very fluid midfield trio that we're also going to talk a lot about, of Wijnaldum, mostly as the number 6 in the holding midfield role. And then we had Thiago and Curtis Jones, both of them very mobile, and the front 3 that everyone knows, Mane, Firmino, and Salah.
Yeah, and Jose, as you point out, 3 center backs injured. For me, center back with goalkeeper, obviously, but it's the most specific position on the field, maybe. If you have 3 fullbacks injured, that's bad luck as well, but you can always play a midfielder at fullback. If you have 3 strikers injured, then you can play maybe a midfielder as false 9 at striker or a winger at striker. But 3 center backs of injured, that's you really have to make do there. And they have a lot of players with a lot of tactical variety that can play there. But it's really a blow to your title aspirations, man.
Yes. And there are articles to be written about how well, for example, Fabinho has adapted into the role. For example, you see him today and even then you see Hendo was struggling a bit in that role. But Fabinho has slotted in quite well there.
Yeah, but center back at this level, it scares me, man. What you have to can do in one package of a player, it scares me. So in hindsight, Henderson didn't do too bad, can we say?
Absolutely. And yeah, so there was this take from Kees on Twitter recently that I think he's right. It's at this point, modern elite football demands basically way too much of center backs. And there's really only a handful of players that can really do this role, everything expected of the role, the holding the high line, the defending the box, the playing out of the back. Only a handful of players can do all of these things at like the top level.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this podcast and not on Twitter, Jose was talking about Kees van Hemmen. Lives in the US, Dutch name, so I thought he was Dutch, but apparently from the US, and he has a lot of smart takes. So if you are on Twitter, you know who he is. I'd like to talk about Manchester City. They have their own injury issues, actually. You could say that two of their most influential players are not there, in Aguero and Kevin De Bruyne. Yeah, and Guardiola has gone through his own, I wouldn't call it a metamorphosis, but like to his own development. I think Manchester City is more balanced this season. As we all know, Guardiola is obsessed with things like rest defense and how are my players positioned if we lose the ball. And this has led actually to Manchester City having by far the best and most consistent defensive record in the league. Their expected goals conceded is the lowest in the league. Their actual goals conceded is the lowest in the league. And they've done that in two ways. Firstly, their fullbacks are now a lot more conservative than last year. Most notably, João Cancelo almost plays like a number six in midfield, while the wingers take care of taking the width at the side. So in this case, it was Mahrez and Sterling, but whoever plays there should keep the width. And another important element is also that they press a little bit less now. If you look at their passes per defensive action, another stats term that can really quantify how much a team presses, you see that they have been pressing a lot less this season. And they're more willing to retreat into a like 4-4-2 mid-block formation, which works great. Yeah, as we said, today it was a 4-3-3 formation. Ederson in goal, left back Zinchenko, central defenders Ruben Dias, John Stones, right back João Cancelo, midfield Rodri as the holding midfielder, and then Gundogan and Bernardo Silva as the central midfielders, and then the forward trio of Raheem Sterling on the left, Mahrez on the right, and Foden in the middle. And I'd like to point out, Jose, two things about that forward line. One, I said the wingers keep the width on the sides, so Sterling on the left with his right foot, but he starts wide. And Mahrez with his left foot on the right, but he also starts wide. And it's easy to say, okay, Foden, midfielder. So he's probably a false nine as a striker. But I don't think, Jose, we could call him a false nine today, can we? Like, he was like more of a traditional striker than dropping into midfield, but not as a false nine.
That's actually a good point. I would say that Foden, generally, he had a great game, but it is true that he wasn't really too involved like in the build-up phase for Manchester City. And it's relevant because when we usually talk about a player who's doing a false nine role, you do expect like the player to drop a bit, to drop and participate like in possession a bit more often. That is true. Like, he didn't intervene that much.
Yeah. So if we look at recent seasons, when these two teams met, we saw a little bit conservative approach from both Guardiola and Klopp, which shows how much they respect each other. Which is basically, if we delve into this match, Jose, what we saw here as well, right? Like, it was quite conservative the first 15, 20 minutes, no?
Absolutely. One thing that I would actually like to say about City is that in this particular case, I think they were using their wingers pretty out wide, but in other games, they use their wingers like on more inside roles, especially because in more recent games, what we've seen, for example, is Foden playing, say, as left winger, and then he takes like a very inside role. That has been happening a lot recently. This game was kind of a different approach because, yes, they put Foden in the middle, and by the way, this is something that I think Guardiola has done also against Real Madrid, to put Foden in the middle so that Sterling can get the one versus one against the opposition fullback. Because here, I think this decision was done clearly with the intention of pitting Sterling against Trent, which is a decision that had a big impact on the game.
Yeah, sure. But these teams are both known for their pressing, right, Jose? If we think of Guardiola, we think of pressing. If we think of Klopp, we think of pressing. But in these games, we see it's like a lot more conservative than normal, right? It's more from a mid-block. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Absolutely. So in these cases, we would say that both teams kind of start out with the press, but basically, like, you can still see probably like the typical pressing triggers that you see with Liverpool and Manchester City, but both teams actually retreat pretty quickly once the first line of press gets broken. And quite frankly, in this game, both teams were pretty good at breaking each other's first line of pressing.
Yeah, and I think that defined the game in the first half, that because the press was less aggressive, Liverpool and City both could play out from the first line, but they couldn't really create a lot of chances when they broke that first line. So I think both teams kind of gave up their pressing, felt okay, it's okay to contain them in a mid-block, and that's why we didn't see a lot of chances in the first half, did we?
Absolutely. We're going to go into the shot count at the end, but yes, this was a very low shooting first half. That being said, I find it quite nice, like the ways both teams are so well developed in their build-up phases this time. From City's perspective, what we had a lot of the time to go past Liverpool is that you had this adjustment with Cancelo basically acting as like the second holding midfielder beside Rodri. So whenever City could not access Rodri, then the ball gets passed to Cancelo, and then Cancelo tries to make the forward passes to like Gundogan, to Bernardo, to Foden. So it was a nice adjustment. It worked out pretty nicely for them. That being said, yes, in the first 15 minutes, even though City had more of the ball, they really just got, I think, one shot off. Like normally, like the ball often went to the wings to say Sterling or Dumares. They try to go for the one versus one, didn't get past their markers.
No, and I'd like to iterate two things. One, as I pointed out earlier, Cancelo really, really has a special role in this because he plays as a midfielder in possession. So then he's a right back, then he's a midfielder. It's the role Guardiola first trusted Philipp Lahm to do. And it's quite a statement, but I think Cancelo is nearing what Lahm did in that position, which is really special. It shows his really high level that I compliment him that way. And the second thing is that the tactical execution in this game in the first half, but also in the second half, it was so high. There was so little time on the ball. You had to think so quickly. So we often say the word intensity when we mean a game with a high physical intensity, but this game had a lot of tactical intensity. There was little time to think. You had to make your decisions quick, and it really showed, I thought, in the quality of the players.
Mm-hmm. And going on to the next phases of the game, like after those initial like 15, 20 minutes where City had a bit more of the ball, then afterwards we start seeing Liverpool have the ball a bit more and they were starting to create more chances. And that's the part where we have to start talking about just how neat is this Liverpool midfield trio. What do you think, Eric?
Yeah, it's nice. It's fluid, right? Like, they play with three midfielders, and as you pointed out, Wijnaldum is most often the most holding midfielder, but it's very fluid. Then Curtis Jones can collect the ball, and Wijnaldum moves up a little bit higher. Then Thiago collects the ball as the lone six. Then you have a Wijnaldum-Thiago double pivot, which is quite diverse in quality, we can say, when it comes to playmaking. And I think that's wonderful. That's really something Klopp has worked into it over the course of the past few seasons, and which also shows how these two managers have started to look a lot more like each other. So I thought that was wonderfully done. And I have to say, Curtis Jones did a really good job in that as well.
That's the thing. Like, it's a very Klopp kind of midfielder, a guy who can be pretty active, like pretty dynamic without the ball. And then he has that kind of passing that's very common in Klopp teams where he's like, I'm not going to say, like, from Klopp midfielders, you often get passers that are not, well, Gini is the best example, a passer who doesn't really make too many mistakes, but it's also a bit conservative. So, which is, again, the entire reason they got Thiago, because they wanted someone who could make more risky passes.
Yeah, that's totally right. I also saw, Jose, a lot of long balls from Henderson and Trent that didn't lead to too much. Like, that was their approach as well. Mix it up a little bit. So not only the short passing into the fluid midfield, what we just said, but long cross-field passes didn't lead to too much. One of the few open play chances in the first half was actually in the 24th minute. One of those long balls led to a bad clearance from Zinchenko, who's, as we all know, not really a defender. Alexander-Arnold picked up the ball, dribbles past Zinchenko, crosses into the box. Good Mane header, flies over the post. One of the few open play chances in the first half. Yeah, a lot of crosses we saw in this phase. Like, I also thought the counter-pressing in this part of the match really shone through for both teams, which was also a big part of why there were not a lot of chances. And I thought, all in all, up until the 38th minute, in where we saw a penalty, not a lot happened, really. So you want to talk about the penalty, or?
Well, before going into the penalty, it is true that for the most part, yeah, Liverpool was doing a lot. That's the thing. They were getting out of the first line of press, but then afterwards, like, there wasn't too much. Like, they were struggling to really break that deeper Manchester City block. Again, a lot of the time it was just that, like, long ball and hope for the best. The counter press was good from Liverpool because, yes, it kept Manchester City pushed back. And that's the thing. We were seeing Liverpool kind of having more of the ball, dominating a bit in that towards the end of the half. And then you get the penalty, which this is a situation where, again, it will not be the last time in this game that this is going to happen, where City gets the ball out wide to Sterling. Sterling beats Trent, and then he forces a foul from Fabinho, and that led to a penalty. yeah, kind of like where Gundogan pretty much flew it over. Pretty spectacularly.
There's like a spell on Manchester City taking penalties at Anfield in the past few seasons, because it's not the first time, eh?
Well, it's actually a general thing. So I was looking at United Arena on Twitter was actually putting up like the numbers, and right now, like, they are only scoring like 66% of penalties. Like, I think in the Guardiola era, something like that. And the normal rate of scoring a penalty is 76%. So it is lower than usual.
That's a strange thing. Might be variance, might be something at play. Who knows? Anyways, pretty bad penalty kick from Gundogan. And yeah, as we expected, according to the playbook, as you will, first half, we get 7 shots, 0-0, with the penalty kick being a bit of an anomaly. So in the first half, Jose, we saw the basic game of Manchester City and Liverpool in the past few seasons. Little penalty area action. Lots of things to unpack for us as tactics fans, but for the quote-unquote neutral viewer who just wants to see a good game, it was a bit boring, can we say?
I guess because there's just not much, and like, it's not, there's not much action in terms of shots, and like, yeah, like, not many shots happening, so you don't feel, and it's not like a super end-to-end game. Like, it's, yeah, it's not like this high tempo thing where the ball goes up and down and teams keep producing shots. No, it was a more slower thing from both teams.
Yeah, but the ball is also in the middle third a lot, you know. But yeah, my comment was more like, we and listeners of this podcast as tactics fans, oh, we see pressing triggers, we see a fluid midfield. But if you just sit down and you are not a Manchester City fan or a Liverpool fan or a tactics fan and you just want to see a good game, then I think you can count on this as a bit boring, right?
Yeah, and again, this, as we said before, like, this has been kind of the standard for City versus Liverpool for the last 2 years or so. Both teams are pretty conservative against each other, respect each other a lot, and try and don't take too many risks.
Right, but we can say the neutral football fan was rewarded in the second half because we got no less than 5 goals. So lots to unpack there. First of all, not only because of the goals, because that's always easy to say, but it was not only because of the goals, but the second half was more open from my point of view. Do you agree with that and why?
I do kind of agree with that. And I do think that there were some tactical changes that led to it. Like, from Liverpool's perspective, I didn't see too many major tactical changes. One thing I did notice is that starting like late first half and then going into the second half, Curtis Jones kind of moved from like the right side of the pitch more towards the left side. And then Thiago started moving more freely across the entire pitch. So just more fluidity from Liverpool's midfield. Then from City's side, the most important adjustment I saw for the second half, City were, when they dropped into the 4-4-2 deeper block, you normally had like Foden pressing alongside either Sterling or Mahrez. In the second half, the block changed and you had the 4-4-2, but with Sterling and Mahrez on the wings. And then you had Foden and Bernardo Silva, who is a super active pressing midfielder. Both of them were kind of at the front pressing, which eventually led to some mistakes by certain Liverpool players.
Yeah, you said it right, because we get a goal after 48 minutes. Another one-versus-one situation where Sterling beats Trent Alexander-Arnold. So that was quite an impactful decision from Guardiola to play Sterling on the left. The play started with a Cancelo pass into the final third, which we can predict by now, right? Because he plays on the inside so much. quick combination. And Foden was integral in getting the ball to Sterling, who then beats Trent Alexander-Arnold, as we said earlier. Foden moves right in between Liverpool center backs, so that was very important from him. Alisson, in the first shot, he saved it, but the ball was not saved well enough to prevent a rebound, and it goes to Gundogan, who gets a relatively easy tap-in, but hey, you have to be there to score the goal, and makes up for his penalty mistake. So after the goal, it's always more open, and I think this match, it's a cliche, but still it needed a goal.
Yeah. It did open up a bit after the goal. Going into this, like talking about Alisson having an off game, like to me, it had an off second half, because that one in that first goal was something that Alisson saved, yes. But I think that Alisson at his peak usually saves that shot in such a way that it doesn't land right in front of Gundogan. Like he's usually pretty good at like that technique of like basically rejecting the ball so that it goes, say, to the other side rather than in front of the 6-yard box, which is where it shouldn't go.
Do you think in a good game he makes a save that prevents a Gundogan tap in?
That's kind of what I was thinking, like before all the bloopers happened, like I was looking at that save and I'm like, I feel that he could have saved that one a bit better. But anyways, going into what happened afterwards, I thought that Liverpool had a pretty nice reaction to the goal because of how City were pressing now, like with Bernardo and with Foden at the front, it was a bit more difficult for them to play out of the back. So they kept going on the long ball approach. Sometimes Trent like switching play to the left, which led to a dangerous shot from Curtis Jones. And then on the 61st minute, we get another penalty, which was long pass again from Trent. Goes to Salah. Diaz cannot clear the ball, so Salah gets it. And, well, we have to admit, Salah kind of falls at the minimum touch from Diaz.
Yeah, that was bad. I don't want to make this into a podcast like that. There are other pundits who are very good at that, but I didn't like that. It's almost diving. So I'll just say about it. It's almost diving. I don't like that, especially not in a great game like this.
But yeah, whatever the case, well, afterwards, like, well, they score the penalty. I think City also had a bit of a reaction to that goal. But then most importantly, we had the substitutions from Liverpool. So we had Curtis Jones and Thiago going out like at the 68th minute, and then in come Shaqiri and Milner. So my question is, do you think these subs improved Liverpool?
Well, we have the benefit of hindsight. It's so easy for us to say, oh, it was 1-1 when those subs were made and the game finished 4-1 for City. So it didn't improve them. But I tried to think of a relevant explanation for this move, but I just can't make it up. Like, I don't understand why you take Thiago out. Like, the only reason I can think of is, okay, because of the coronavirus, the season is so much shorter and you need to rotate. You need to keep everyone fresh. But for pure footballing reasons, I cannot see a reason for this double sub.
Exactly. Then that's also what I was thinking. That to me, this substitution is more thinking about the next game and about rotating your players than about something actually tactical and like football related that was happening in the game.
Sorry that I interrupted you. I tried to look into some Klopp comments about it, but it wasn't asked of him like why he made those subs. So I don't know.
Yeah, whatever the case, it didn't improve Liverpool. And of course, at that point, it did kind of look like it was going to be another like 1-1 Liverpool City game with not that much happening. And then it happened.
Yeah. I'd like to point out one more time, promised the last time, that for me, this was totally the normal Liverpool City game. Close game, conservative, everything we called out. But a lot of crazy shit happened in this game that normally doesn't happen. Two penalty kicks and like Alisson just losing his mind for like 15 minutes. I don't know what happened. Everyone who saw the game knows he made two key mistakes with his feet that cost Liverpool. Everyone that saw highlights will have seen those key mistakes. Everyone will clown on him, even though he's one of the best goalkeepers with his feet in the game. So it's quite unfair. But hey, Jose, we know how it works. He's the clown now for a week, so okay. But I think it's sad because people will like draw conclusions about this from Liverpool and all the stuff. Like they will say, oh yeah, they're past it or whatever. But this was just like two incidents in 3 minutes that totally decided the match.
Yeah. And going into the actual incidents, like the one thing we have to say about like these Alisson mistakes is that it wasn't really like two like punctual passes that he missed. Like you could see that he was stringing several mistakes with the ball in a row. Like even in each of the plays where the goals happened, there were other bad controls and bad passes. Like for example, so on the first goal, 73rd minute, like he had a missed control that then forces Fabinho to send it long and forces Liverpool to lose possession. Then Alisson gets the ball back again. He wants to send it to Robertson, but misses the pass and sends it to Foden instead. Foden kills Henderson, cuts back to Gundogan, and that's the second goal there. Then we had the incident that's 3 minutes later where he had another like series of like bad passes and like another pass that didn't have like the right tension to Fabinho that puts him in an even more difficult situation. Eventually, Alisson has another one that ends up at Bernardo Silva's feet, who like a beautiful lob that Sterling heads into the goal. And yeah, those are the two big incidents. And as I said, I think the key thing is that they were several passes and controls that were missed. This was a player that had clearly switched off entirely.
Yeah, it's good that you zoom in a little bit about technically what went wrong. That's good context. I think also, especially in the second instance, I think the positioning of Liverpool is not optimal. Like his fellow players are not positioned in a way that make it possible for him to play out from the back, but it still does not warrant the kind of mistake he made. So, yeah. It's sad for me that it was decided this way, you know? I don't like to see it decided this way.
Yeah. That being said, so at this point, of course, the game was almost dead. But just to end a bit the analysis, the other change that we had from Manchester City's side was that Mahrez went out and Gabi Jesus went in. And we had a bit of a restructuring in the forward line because then Gabi Jesus was the striker. Foden moved to the right wing and then he would go on to score the final goal of the game with just, a really nice cutting inside to open up space and then a wonderful strike that just zooms past Alisson. He cannot stop. And that was a great game from Foden.
If we are analyzing the goalkeeper performance anyway, great strike. I want to take nothing away from it. And Foden played a brilliant game. He really did. But shouldn't Alisson do better there? Like, I know it's a hard shot, but still.
That's a hard shot. Like, I am willing to cut him slack there because that one went quite quick. I do feel that maybe if he were in a better mental state, yes, maybe Alisson can kind of stop that because he's, again, we're talking about one of the best shot stoppers in the world. But yeah, even if there was a chance of him stopping that, he wasn't in the mental state to do it.
Yeah. So do you want to go into takeaways or not?
Absolutely, because at this point, that game, with that last goal, that game was very much over.
So sorry for sounding so sad and somber about this. Also to the listener, sorry, but it just saddens me that these two great teams that we take so much fun of watching, that it gets decided by, like it always gets decided by these close details. But in essence, I think we saw a match technically that should have ended 1-0, 0-0, or 0-1, like we have saw so many times over the past few seasons. But the variance just ran away with this and made it into a 1-4 game. And it saddens me that it will fall onto Alisson so much because he's done so well in the past few seasons, you know? How do you feel?
Yeah, football is what it is. It's a random, cruel sport. Liverpool did most of what they had to do throughout this game. But a series of mistakes or a player not having a good night, that can make or break your night. So it is what it is. It is football. The only thing we can say is that, people might draw too many conclusions like from this game, even though the score looks lopsided. But really, I don't think there are things that Liverpool could have done much better here. Like that's the thing. Like it's not just that the center backs are injured. Like Diego Jota, who is often could have been like the change to revitalize your team in second halves, he's also injured. So what do you do in those situations?
Yeah, it's not easy. I do think to zoom in one more thing about your point, I do think people will really run away with this 4-1 and just analyze the result and not analyze the match, because to me, that this doesn't really even say that much. Like, I saw the same game I saw in the past few seasons, but just with a little bit more variance. So I don't think, if you read like people with really strong opinions about either City being ruthless or either Liverpool being slackers or whatever, like, take that with a grain of salt, because from my perspective, at least, this was just variance riding away with the game. And that was the last time I said it.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, it's a bit hard to say, well, yes, of course, City deserved this game quite simply because they capitalized on the opponent's mistakes. But honestly, yeah, before the Alisson bloopers, it was still a pretty even game. Like, both teams usually reacted pretty well to each other's goals. And yeah, there's not much else that can be said about that. Like, it's just, yeah, don't, in other words, like, there, like you said, there might be a lot of narratives coming from this scoreline, but it would be mostly looking at the scoreline rather than the actual tactics and what actually happened in the game.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a cold take to say that these two managers have become more like each other in recent times, you know. So I think everyone who listens to this podcast knows that to be true. So I'd like to finish the podcast, Jose, by whispering one thing to you. Are you ready for it?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I'm quite sure City will become champions. Do you agree with that or not? Like, the data they have underlying, but also their points totals, like, it's quite clear at this point.
Yeah. They are. Let's just say it would be surprising if it didn't happen. So clearly that's what's going to happen. And it would be, what, 3 Pep leagues in 5 years?
That was what I wanted to whisper to you. Like, if that happens, Pep Guardiola has won 3 championships in the last 5 Premier League seasons. Before that, 3 German titles in 3 seasons. And before that, 1 year sabbatical. And before that, 3 Spanish titles in 4 years. That's insane.
Even though he had teams with amazing talent compared to the rest of the league, this is one of the guys that builds league winning machines. Like, these are, Pep teams are machines of consistency. And hey, what can we say? Like, it's not, and by the way, it's not this kind of consistency is like, for example, there's always, like, in the more mainstream analysis, you hear like these things of like Pep being very philosophical and dogmatic. And it's clear that this and Klopp too, like, they are very adaptable managers, and their teams have evolved a lot over the last 3-4 years in order to get better and in order to keep winning championships. And it goes back to the point that you mentioned before. Both managers are becoming more like each other. Like, Klopp has made a Liverpool that is, for example, starting to do a lot more things with the ball than Guardiola is actually finally accepting that they have to tone down the press a bit and defend in a deeper block. So both of them have evolved with each other to keep competing in making this league as interesting as it is right now.
Yeah, I think that's a good one to finish off with. I do think I'm the first one to try to keep things exciting and all that, but this league is over. Now, this was the decider, I think.
What, you don't trust Manchester United to come up with the league title?
Get out, bro.
Like, you're not a man of faith.
No, not at all. Anyways, yeah, let's finish it at that. I really like this game. It's one of my favorite games to unpack tactically. I hope we could, you know, it's hard to talk about tactics on a podcast without having the images. I hope it went well. I hope it's always hard. But when these two teams meet, it's even harder because the level is so high. I hope we did well. Give us some feedback. We'd love that. I'd love to get in touch with everybody who listens to this. Our contact details are in the show notes, which can be found in your podcast player by clicking on the episode. Thanks so much for listening. I really enjoyed this. And Jose, we will most definitely be back next week.
We will most definitely be back next week. Probably, yeah, doing something outside the Premier League this time around. But yeah, this is, as I said, I still stand by the fact that I think this is the highest level game in the world right now. It's always a pleasure to talk about it, to dissect it, and to go through all the little details. And yeah. As usual, thanks for having me here, and thanks everyone for listening. So see you around.
See you around, guys. And Jose, next week it's City Tottenham. So Guardiola, Mourinho. So maybe it's Premier League again. Who knows? But we will decide on that later. And if you want to have a say in that, leave a review on iTunes with 5 stars. Say your match in the comment and then we will review it. For now, thanks so much for listening and we will be back next week.